WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. More lawmakers facing threats. Now two suspects are facing charges. First, prosecutors in Tennessee charging a 25-year-old man with trying to kidnap Memphis Mayor Paul Young.
And authorities say they later found that taser, rope, and duct tape in the suspect's vehicle.
ABC's Pierre Thomas, Minnesota. Brooklyn Park Police today searching a golf course for evidence in connection with the shooting death of State Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark. Their home right next to that golf course. Columbia grad student Mahmoud Khalil has been released from federal immigration detention in Louisiana. The Trump administration tried to deport the U.S. resident over his role in pro-Palestinian protests, but federal judge ruling that he's not violent and unlikely to flee. Felony charges for a man who police say walked into a Broward County, Florida Islamic school today with a hatchet. Deputies say when they arrived at the school, the man immediately threw the hatchet on the ground and laid face down on the floor. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The Brewers head to Minnesota. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball? The Brewers open a three-game series tonight against the Minnesota Twins. The crew held on to beat the Cubs 8-7, thanks to closer Trevor Megill, who had several pitches over the plate called balls instead of strikes. Was the home plate umpire erratic? We asked Pat Murphy.
Erratic. Is there a strategy?
Was he? You said it. I did not say that.
Correct. I said it.
It's a waste of time, in my opinion, for managers to address umpires on balls and strikes. It's a waste of time.
Basketball, the Pacers came roaring back with a 108-91 victory over the Thunder in the NBA Finals. Oshkosh, Wisconsin's Tyrese Halliburton on the decision to play despite a strained calf muscle injury.
I just wanted to be out there and fight, and just had to have an honest conversation with coach that, you know, if I didn't look like myself and, you know, was hurting the team, like, sit me down.
That's the Pacers' Tyrese Halliburton. Game 7, Sunday night in Oklahoma City. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's another community reminder from 107.5 WLAK. There's an Amory Community Blood Drive coming to Amory Chevrolet Tuesday, June 24th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and Wednesday, June 25th from 10 to 4. Again, at Amory Chevrolet, a blood drive. A community reminder for you from 107.5 WLAK.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about, a little ticked off, a little angry, a little upset. Again, you know, just another day in Republican land, because they're at it again, screwing over working people while handing the ultra wealthy more. Another massive handout, more welfare, more giveaway. This time again, it's the estate tax or the death tax. Remember, it's the death tax. And understand what the estate tax was meant to do. It was to stop this massive accumulation of wealth, intergenerational wealth transfers, to where you just keep making bigger and bigger, more powerful empires, oligarchs. It was supposed to stop the billionaires from passing down empires, tax-free, like we were living in some kind of feudal kingdom. And now Republicans are going after it even more, gutting it even more. So understand, and this is where it's amazing to me when I hear working people go, death tax, I shouldn't have to pay a death tax. And you go, you got $30 million? You got $10 million? You got $100 million? Because understand, there are no working stiffs, at least none that I know, that are sitting on a $30 million estate. I'm just not seeing it. Understand, the estate tax only hits the rarefied air, the wealthiest of the wealthy. But our Republican friends, they want us to believe it's about protecting small family farms. It's about double taxation. Come on, give me a break.
This is about enriching the already wildly wealthy. It's a cover to hand trillions to people who have been hoarding wealth in this country for decades. Meanwhile, you, me, the rest of us, we're struggling to pay our rent, cover our medical bills, keep the car filled with gas, put shoes on the kids' feet, all while our wages haven't really moved in decades. In fact, most people I know were better off 20, 30 years ago. I know I was. Our pensions have been just eviscerated for the most part. And even the crumbs that they give us, these really wonderful defined contribution nonsense, even those are under attack. And every time the government says it's broke, guess where our Republicans go to cut? Education, healthcare, infrastructure, you know, things that matter to you and me, to working families. And yet, this is the weird part for me. This is the part that I keep struggling with. You've got working people who keep voting for Republicans. I don't get it. Sort of, kind of do. I've often said that a drowning man will grab an anchor if you throw it to him. Because they're anything. You know, they're reaching for some bit of hope. And I do give a little grace to working people who are on the wrong side of this. Because understand, the right-wing media in this country has spent decades convincing them that their enemy is immigrants, drag queens, or some other made-up culture war nonsense. All the while, it's our Republican friends who are robbing them blind in broad daylight. For me, the big issue is the fact that Reagan, W. Bush, and Donald Trump have passed massive, massive tax cut plans that have only made our billionaire class wealthier, all the while sticking it to working people. And I look at this estate tax scam as just another chapter in a long, long book that Republicans have written of fighting tooth and nail to protect the wealthy from the rest of us. Protect the wealthy billionaires. And then, of course, turn around and blame us when there's no money for Social Security or public schools. It's our fault. They're not for workers. And I've been saying this for a long time. Republicans, they hate working people. They've never been on the side of working people. They're for the rich. They always have been. I go back to my high school civics teacher. When I asked him, well, which party do you align with? How do you know which one you go with? And his answer was, you know, my basic rule of thumb is Republicans are for the very wealthy, for big business, for, you know, basically, you know, what we've got now. And Democrats are for big social programs to help the poor. You've got to decide, you folks somewhere near the middle, have to decide which you're closer to because you're going to pay for both of them. And I clearly, coming from poverty, am closer to being poor again than I am in the world of Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and the rest of them. So when you look at this, you go, yeah, of course Republicans are in bed with the very wealthy. They always have been. And for me, I go, you know, it's about time we wake up and stop falling for the same damn con. That somehow you're gonna win the billionaire lottery and they're gonna welcome you with open arms into the big club. Not gonna happen. And the weird thing for me is I look at this and I know I'm gonna get emails from red hats. I know I'm gonna get former Democrats who have seen the light to email me angry emails. I get them every day. I get emails every day from longtime listeners who are disappointed or from someone who used to be a fan or someone that I've lost because I blame Trump too much and the GOP too much for what they actually do. I look at this and again, we've been getting screwed over for so long. And while I was never a Bill Clinton fan, his handler, James Carville, had the right attitude. It's the economy, stupid. It's what Democrats have kind of forgotten and why I hope they get their heads out of their behinds. Because Republicans have been doing everything in their power to destroy working people. You look at the tax bill. You look at these tax codes. We used to have a billionaire class that paid their taxes. We used to have an enforcement arm that ensured they did. And then we use that money for things to make lives better. But here again, it's history that most of my emailers, they don't know. So, you know, whenever I get these, and I see, I'm one of those people, and I've been taking a lot of garbage lately from people going, you talk to Red Hats? Yeah, all the time. As often as I can. I wish I could do it more. Because whenever I get these emails, the first response back, no matter what they say, no matter what the angry screed about how Democrats have screwed up, how, and look, they're now linking mainstream corporate media articles that are saying the Democrats are in chaos, the circular firing squad, Democrats are out of touch with working people, because that's their narrative. But when those folks send me that stuff, I send them an email back and I go, look, before we engage, and I want to engage with you, tell me two things you think Biden did right, and tell me two things you think Donald Trump did wrong. And invariably, I get an email back, if I get one at all. Most of the time, it's the way, honestly, between you, me, and the four walls, it's how I weed people out, because they don't want to admit that they don't know anything. But when I do get responses back, it's always, there's nothing Joe Biden did right. And most of the time, it's, well, you know, I don't like how Trump treats women, or some of his past business deals, or his, you know, his, you know, some of the grift that's going on. You know, I don't like, you know, some of the bellicose behavior. You know, some of the threatening. I don't like some of the rhetoric, but you know, his policies. And then I go, name one, and invariably, again, not able to name very many policies. But when they say that they don't know anything that Biden did right, and they claim to be working people, they claim to be union working people, that's disturbing, because that's telling me the Democratic message is not getting out. That's telling me that I'm not doing something, because understand, I think Joe Biden did a good job. I thought the person that he put at the head of the NLRB was fabulous. I thought, you know, the Federal Trade Commission person, Alina Khan, was great. Jonathan Cantor over the Department of Justice. The people that he put in the Department of Labor, places that affect our lives, the policy enforcers in agencies across our government, I thought were good. Compare them to the people Trump has put into place. Night and day. Not to mention, you know, Joe Biden did backstop all of the multi-employer pension funds in this country to make sure working people got what they earned, what they paid into. But here I come back to this because I think it's important. I think it's important to go and understand, you know, why are we hearing the Red Hat world saying, oh, well, you know, I used to be a Democrat, but the party has left me. And why is that? Why do they believe that? Well, I'll be quite frank. Democratic messaging is bad. It is. The big tent where everyone's in and everyone gets a voice muddles the message. And when the right-wing media starts framing Democratic messages for them, then they end up getting saddled with really bad messages. For instance, when I get responses back from people, I ask, what is it that made you leave? And it's always, and I don't even, I know what's coming back. It's always the LGBTQ trans stuff. It's always that. It's always the bathroom stuff. It's always this culture war stuff. You know, Democrats are fighting to have pedophiles go into bathrooms. No, they're not. No, that's not what it's about. And look, I've had people go, well, why do you support trans rights? Because, you know, as an eighth grader, I was taught that the great thing about this country is each of us, each and every one of us, have the right to pursue our happiness. That ideal of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. As long as what you do doesn't infringe on my rights to do what I want to do, you go do what you want to do. And if someone wants to rearrange their plumbing, that's got nothing to do with me. Do your thing. be happy. But understand, that issue affects a very small percentage of the population of this country and has dominated our politics to the point to where we've got a now a big, beautiful nightmare of a tax bill going through that's going to harm the working class of this country and enrich the very wealthy. We've seen this before. It's happened over and over again. Now, the interesting thing is I get people who then respond to me, well, why are you a Democrat? And that's a much more important question because I'm actually able to answer that. I'm a union guy. I've been a union guy virtually my entire working life. I work hard. I play by the rules, and I've done pretty well. I would argue that I've gotten a little bit ahead, not as much as I would like. But I believe in the dignity of work. I believe in democracy, both in the public square and in the lunchroom. And as someone who is a registered Democrat, I am that because I haven't forgotten where working people like me got a foothold in this country. You go back to the New Deal era. FDR, through the New Deal, because of working people pooling their votes and those votes mattering, gave us a real shot. You know, when people say, we got crummy Democrats, I go, well, then you got crummy Democratic voters because we should have better candidates. If you're not happy with the candidates, you voted for them. You know, I think back to that New Deal era, though. My great-grandfather got work through the WPA. My grandparents built what was the most prosperous working class in the history of humanity by returning from Europe fighting fascism to the shop floor to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, into the streets to fight for a fair day's pay for a fair day's work. My parents' era, their generation, was able to retire with Social Security and some bit of a pension. And I've benefited from some of those protections. They're going away. They're under attack every time a Republican gets into office. There has never been a Republican who hasn't gone after organized labor and done something to limit workers' ability to fight for those better wages, hours, and conditions. That's reality. So you go, well, why aren't you a Republican? That's it. We can go through all kinds of other things. But that's the focus of it. It's the economy, stupid. I've benefited from those programs. And those programs, those protections, came out of a time when the government understood that labor wasn't the problem. It was the backbone of this country, of the American economy. The right to organize, overtime pay, unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, collective bargaining, child labor laws. None of those came at the hands of a benevolent corporation handing out favors. They came from Democratic administrations standing up for working people. Now, look, do I think Democrats have a lot of work to do? Yes, but it's in their roots. Now, you take all of those things I just mentioned. Republicans fought tooth and nail against them because they were in the boss's pocket. So why am I a Democrat? Well, that's a big part of it. I believe in protecting what was built, trying to hold on to some vestiges of that prosperity that working people used to have. And I believe in a government that should be working for working people, not just the wealthy and the well-connected, which we're seeing every day out of the Trump administration. So for all those people who are going, you just bashed Trump, for good darn reason. And I'll tell you what keeps me up at night. I see more and more working people voting against their own interests, voting for politicians who want to bust unions, slash Social Security, slash Medicare and Medicaid. And again, tip the tax code in the favor of the billionaires and the wealth class. Look, I don't blame workers. I blame the machine that's been feeding them lies day after day, year after year. Almost 20 years ago, I started this program. And it was with that little kernel of there's got to be some balance. There's got to be something that working people can get decent information or an alternative thought. Understand, the right-wing corporate-controlled media is the billionaire class in disguise. And look, they've done a really, really darn good job of convincing people that their enemies are their neighbors, not the ones writing the laws in favor of the very wealthy. They've told us to be afraid of each other, to hate each other, instead of asking, why are our wages stagnant? Why haven't my wages gone up in 30 years? Why is my standard of living getting better? Why am I having a harder time sending my kids to college? Why is it we can't afford a vacation? Now, look, I know that socialism's a bad word, but most of us rely on some social programs. And I guess it's because I remember my childhood. I remember growing up in a housing project where the cupboards were bare at the end of the month because the food stamps didn't cover enough. I remember my mother looking in my eyes, knowing I was hungry, and there was nothing she could do because there were no jobs in the neighborhood. And there was no bus line to get there. So when I see people, well, all of them get a job. My mother desperately wanted a job. Nobody wanted the indignity of taking clown money to the store to be humiliated. But you did what you had to do to get by because there weren't any jobs. Because the private sector, they sure as you know what, weren't going to create them. And the public sector, well, we can't do anything. Understand. Socialism is the VA that the Republicans are trying to destroy. It's the Medicare that the Republicans are trying to destroy. The Social Security that they're trying to destroy. The roads that they want to privatize. The water systems that they want to privatize. It's a con, plain and simple. And you got Donald Trump at the head of this. So wonder why I don't like Donald Trump? Well, you know, it is what it is. And understand, my working class brethren turn on cable news or right-wing talk radio, and all they hear is screaming about, you know, crime and immigration, drag queens. Even though crime is at its lowest rate in my lifetime, immigration is desperately needed, and drag queens, I don't care. What I do care about is the fact that they're gutting workers' rights. We're gutting OSHA. We're gutting NIOSH. We're gutting MSHA. We're still losing jobs, slashing benefits. And, you know, the Jay Gould, I can pay half the working class to murder the other half. They keep us distracted enough so that while they're picking our pockets, we don't quite notice. We don't quite see who the pickpocket is. And the sad reality is too many people have bought into this. We voted against our own worst interests, our own best interests. And you've got working people voting for politicians who oppose the minimum wage increase, who want to make it harder for workers to join and form unions, who call teachers and nurses special interests while handing out tax breaks to corporations and Elon Musk and people who don't pay any federal taxes. It's insane to me. And then they call it freedom. But freedom without economic security isn't freedom. What good is the freedom to choose your doctor or choose between 20 different hamburgers if you can't afford it? If you can't afford to go to the doctor or have the money in your pocket to buy the hamburger? What good is the freedom to send your kids to college if they're drowning in debt? Freedom is having a say in your workplace, a safe roof over your head, the ability to retire with some bit of dignity. That's the kind of freedom the Democratic Party that I believe in, believes in, and is and when it's at its best, fights for. So Democrats, it's the economy, stupid. And understand, I'm not saying Democrats are perfect. Far, far from it. In fact, longtime listeners know I hammer on Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, even Joe Biden, because he could have been better. He could have done more. And they've lost their way plenty of times. And there's still too much corporate influence in both parties. But when it comes down to it, only one side is still defending the idea that government has a role to play in making lives better, in protecting the vulnerable, in life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Now look, you don't have to take my word for it. Look at the policies. Which party supports expanding labor rights? Which party wants to protect Medicare and Social Security? Who's trying to do something about student loan debt? Who's investing in infrastructure? Who's bringing manufacturing jobs back and wanting them to be good union jobs? It's not coming from our GOP friends. It's coming from the Democrats. So that's why I'm there. Not because I'm a loyalist. I'm not loyal to the party, because I'm loyal to my class. I'm loyal to other working people. To the people who build this country every day and deserve to have something to show for it when it's done. And I won't be fooled by a media that wants us to be more distracted by the shiny thing and their ratings than actual reality. I won't be distracted by the culture war nonsense when my brothers and sisters are struggling to afford rent or health care. And I'm going to vote for Democrats as long as they continue to fight for working class values, because I remember who brought the light into the dark days of the Depression, who stood up to Wall Street, who gave working people a voice. And I believe we need that voice more than ever now. So you can call me myopic that, oh, you only think about the labor movement. Because understand, I believe in democracy, both in the town square and in the workplace. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. But get ready. If you're one of my red hats, dream up two things you think Biden did right. And then, you know, find two things you think that Donald Trump did wrong. I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So this week got a number of emails from people saying, you know, that governor of New York, she gave $50 million to some legal fund to fight for immigrants. And, you know, the people I got back to, I said, no, it wasn't $50 million. It was actually $64.2 million that was earmarked in the state's budget for legal aid for immigration. And it's been in the state's budget for a while. Interesting that now you've decided that this is something you're going to be crazy about. And this is one of those things where, as a working person, you go, okay, why is this a good thing? Why should the state spend $64.2 million on legal aid? And I argue reality, because we believe in due process. We've got an administration right now that's just rounding people up and throwing them out. We got an administration right now who's being honest. We don't care. We're going to grab anyone. And either we're a country of laws that believes in due process and habeas corpus, or we're not. And if we're not, well, understand, you could be next. And as I've said a million times, you go back and you read Pastor Niemöller's poem from during the World War II era, where he said, look, first they came for the socialists. And I said nothing because I wasn't a socialist. Then they came for the who? The trade unionists. And I said nothing because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews and so on. By the time they came for me, there was nobody left to speak up. For me, I believe in due process. If there is someone here illegally, we bring them to court. We find them guilty. We deal with them. But this idea that we're just going to round people up and not give them an opportunity? I don't know. That sounds un-American to me. Also, remember when Republicans claimed that they cared about the debt? Evidently, they're about to raise the debt ceiling. And remember when they were against raising it during the Obama years and the Biden years? Evidently, now we're talking about an increase. $4 trillion tax cut, with a $5 trillion increase in the debt limit. Remember when Republicans cared about debt and deficits? And remember when they said they were fiscally responsible? Remember that? Yeah. I got to ask, Red Hat folk, what would you have done had Democrats done that? What would be the answer? What would be the argument? What would make you angry then? I'm sure there wouldn't be something to distract you from that. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. When we come back, Morris Pearl from the Patriotic Millionaire is going to be here to share some thoughts on Jerome Powell's most recent testimony. Quick break. Right back with Morris.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matinee on Air.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy, warm, and muggy tonight with maybe a stray storm and lows in the mid-70s. This weekend, extreme heat warning. Mostly sunny, hot, breezy, and humid. Highs mid-90s, heat index triple digits. Some storms Sunday night and Monday. Currently at 79.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So an interesting story that came out of the Senate Banking Committee hearing where Fed Chair Jerome Powell recently testified. And it was one of those things that, you know, we've been talking about here for a very long time. You look at what happened in Florida, you look at what's going on in California and Texas, as insurers are bailing on the markets and basically just either leaving it to the state or leaving consumers and homeowners high and dry. But the Fed chair said those banks and insurance companies are pulling out of areas, coastal areas, and areas where there are a lot of fires. He said, so what's going to happen, what this is going to mean, is if you fast forward 10, 15 years, there are going to be regions of the country where you cannot get a mortgage. And I would argue we're getting there rather quick. And with this administration doing everything they can do to destroy any movement to green, clean, renewable energy and do anything about climate, I'm going to say that's going to accelerate probably faster than 15 years. But here to share some thoughts on what this could mean for Wall Street, what this could mean for the market, what this could mean for consumers. I've asked my good friend Morris Pearl to come share some thoughts. Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. You can check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, great to be in your show. Thank you.
So what do you make of this? What do you make of Jerome Powell's statement? Now, I thought it was a kind of a big deal, to use a Bidenism, kind of a big freaking deal. Because yeah. I've been saying about this for years, but here's the Fed chair saying exactly what I've been saying.
Rick, it's not going to be 15 years. You know, it's more like right now. There are parts of Florida where you cannot give away a condo. And some of it's because of their, you know, new laws that you have to actually inspect the things for safety. But there are parts of Florida that, frankly, there have been so much losses of insurance. Insurance, homeowners insurance is unavailable in some places right now. Parts of Florida, little bits of South Texas, around the Gulf Coast. And most mortgage lenders, in fact, as far as I know, all, will not give you a mortgage if you do not have homeowners insurance.
Right.
Most people cannot buy without a mortgage. And that means that people who own these houses and condos cannot sell them, not for any price. There are places you can't even give away a condo right now because of what's the insurers certainly see as a major change in the climate and the risks between the floods or out west, the fires and the hurricanes and all of the things that are happening, you know, you can argue all day that it's, you know, a figment of our imagination or something Nancy Pelosi made up. But the insurance companies are seeing it in the numbers, and they're seeing that there's no way they can profitably give homeowners insurance to people in certain areas. And so basically they're stuck. You cannot buy and sell condominiums in certain parts of Florida right now.
And the reality is when that happens on a grander scale, if you think we have a problem now with vulture capitalists and Wall Street gobbling up rental properties, wait till this happens and they're the only ones who can buy properties.
It's true. I mean, we might move back to a lot more rentals and less homeownership. And it might be a lot sooner than in 15 years. You know, even, you know, it's homeownership rate has been between like low 60s and high 60s of percentage for as long as we've been keeping records. And it could decline rapidly if only people with money are able to buy things and rent them out and just sort of take the risk of floods and hurricanes and disasters and whatever else.
Now, I saw a word pop up. The Wall Street Journal came up with a story on stagflation, which I haven't heard since I was a little kid. I guess the question I have for you as a Wall Street guy, someone who understands this a lot better than I do, you know, given the Fed's decision to hold on to interest rates right now, despite the risks of stagflation, which I guess is part of this, do you think this is an effective strategy to keep rates where they are?
Well, look, I didn't apply for a job on the Fed, although maybe I should have. But I don't tell them what to do. But yeah, I mean, what caused stagflation in the past was the fact that you had an external force, namely the Gulf oil countries,
yeah,
raising the price of oil, which took money out of the U.S. economy, raising prices of oil and then prices of everything that depends on oil, like anything that needs to be shipped, which is virtually everything, took money by raised prices and took money out of the economy, but did not result in any increase of business or increase of employment or something, which usually accompanies sort of an increase of prices. So that's what happened. And that could happen again. We're having all kinds of external things. There's a possibility of, you know, conflicts in China where almost all chips come from, and every, you know, iPhone has chips made in China, and so do so many other things that we depend on. And so we could have a situation where, you know, a war in Iran makes oil prices go up, a war in China makes chip prices go up, and money just sort of flows out of the United States, resulting in higher prices for consumers, but without the accompanying higher wages for wage earners. And that's the exact definition of what's stagflation.
Yeah, but
the economy is stagnating for people earning wages because they're not doing any better, but prices are going up because money's going to foreign countries, and that's exactly what we might see.
Yeah, and I, you know, the story of the, you know, the 70s, I look at my grandparents, because my grandfather, both my grandmother and grandfather were union members, both of their contracts had cost of living adjustments, so they did really well during the stagflation period because, you know, as you know, inflation went up, their wages kept up, to the fact where when they bought their house in the mid 60s, by the end of the, you know, the 70s, their mortgage was a day's pay, because the unions had done such a great job of not allowing their wages to be eroded. We're not that country right now. Back then, you were talking about 28% to 30% union density. We're at 6% in the private sector right now.
Yeah, and there was a time, Rick, when Democratic politicians ran on inflation being a good thing, because inflation was a good thing for many people because their wages went up and their mortgage payments were constant. Mortgage payments are the one thing that does not go up with inflation. So if your mortgage payment is your major expense, you could be okay with inflation as long as your wages keep up with the cost of groceries.
I know, it's the argument I was making, you know, a couple of years ago when inflation was creeping up and going, it's not bad as long as we can keep wages in line and you don't go broke in the process. Could be good for debtors. But as you pointed out, you know, the wages just haven't kept up.
It is good for debtors. That's, you know, the miracle of all these California house flippers who made tons of money that was because of inflation and mortgages. And, you know, we're not seeing that now, though, because it's not house prices going up. It's prices of things outside of the country that we're worried about going up.
So how does Trump's tariff policy play into this? I believe Powell said something that this is part of his thinking. So how do the tariffs play into all of this?
Look, of course, I don't, you know every answer, but the way I look at it, there's sort of two general possibilities. One is the tariffs have no effect whatsoever, and I mean, don't really affect things and prices, and that companies like Walmart and the big retailers just stop earning profits. I don't think that's very likely. I don't think that Walmart and other big retailers are going to start selling stuff without making a profit. The other possibility is that the tariffs do have an effect. They raise prices of all imported goods, which allows American manufacturers to raise their prices too, because that's the whole point of a tariff, is to allow the domestic manufacturers to get more money, to be charge higher prices and make more profit. That happens, well, everything costs more. That's sort of the definition of an effective tariff.
Right.
Things cost more. And companies that manufacture things inside the United States make more profit. And
or are able to compete. You know, this is where, you know, look, I've said I'm a tariff person. I think you strategically, as part of an overall plan, I think it's like any tool in your toolbox. If used right, it can be effective. But if it's the only tool that you've got in your box and you think everything, if you're a guy with a hammer and you think everything's a nail and you're walking through a China shop, there's going to be a mess. And this, I think, was what Trump is doing. And in fact, from what I'm hearing, China rolled him. And I knew everyone knew he was going to get taken. From what I'm hearing right now, Mr. Art of the Deal didn't do such a good job.
Well, no, I think that's pretty obvious. But I think it's pretty obvious that if the tariffs can help make more money for Americans if there's Americans making the things that right. you're putting a tariff on. If there's an American steel company that can do better if they can just raise the price of their steel they output a little bit, then they can make money and maybe even expand and do well. But there are no American companies that make large-scale computer chips. There are no American companies that make the volume of oil that we import from Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states. There are no American companies that make a lot of the textiles that get imported from Bangladesh and India. And so they're just going to have higher prices, period.
And again, you come back to this and you know, understand, as I said, as it's part of an overall strategy as a tool. There are industries that we should be protecting. And I'm a protectionist, not an isolationist. I leave the house, I lock the door. I don't have a giant moat, but there are some industries that we do need to maintain, a supply chain we need to maintain. But again, I come back to this administration has just, well, they're the guy with the hammer in the China shop. But I want to move to a different topic real quick.
Sure.
Because the Genius Act just got passed. I think it was 18 Democrats with all but two Republicans voted for this Genius Act, which is going to make crypto, I guess, pegged to the dollar or have some regulation, some bit of legitimacy. As a Wall Street guy, what are your thoughts on crypto? And is this a smart thing for Democrats to have jumped onto?
There's an old saying, you know, when you're doing very well, you say it's like you're printing money. In this case, the government is actually giving people permission to print their own money. Currently, we have U.S. dollars.
Right.
That's the money most people use. They're created by the United States government. If people are allowed to create their own currency, and of course, anybody can create a currency. It's getting other people to accept your currency that's the hard part. But if I could create currencies like Morris dollars and get people to accept them, I'd be rich as Midas. I mean, really. But why on earth would people accept Morris dollars? Because no one else will accept them. They can't do any good with them. But if I was, say, Donald Trump, and I could get people to generally take, oh, I'll take Trump dollars instead of U.S. dollars anytime, he could just create millions, billions however many he wanted.
Not even just Trump. You know, take Trump out of this equation. Elon Musk, or because Musk right now, I'm sure you've seen in Texas, he is creating a basically Muskville. We're going back to the company town mentality. We're going back to the robber baron oligarch model of if you want to live in this town, you're going to have to take, you know, Elon bucks. Yeah. You're going to have to take Bezos bucks. You're going to have to take company script. We've seen this movie before. And it doesn't end well for workers.
Yeah, that's what happened a long time ago, you know, 150 years ago, all over the place. And every once in a while, workers were stuck with this money that became worthless. And they ended up with, you know, large bills and no money and script that nobody would take if they wanted to move away or do anything else. And that's essentially why we ended up creating the Fed and creating the U.S. monetary system we now have back a little over 100 years ago. And I think making America great again is kind of going back to the way it was, you know, prior to creating the Fed in the first place.
But there are some Morris who that's what they want. My libertarian friends, they tell me flat out, we were a better country without the Fed, without actually understanding what you just said, the boom-bust economies, the creating of capital. It's interesting. It's an interesting moment we're in.
Yeah, I don't really understand what people have against the Fed. It's we've had a huge United States government has essentially taken over the world over the last, you know, century or so, and a large part of that has because of the stability of U.S. currencies. I can carry $100 bills in my wallet. And they're good in Hong Kong, and they're good in Lima, Peru, and they're good everywhere in the world, essentially.
Yeah.
That's because our currency is stable. You're not going to do that with, you know, currency from Somalia or Mexico or almost any other country in the world. No one who doesn't like the Fed is able to articulate what they want instead of the Fed. And that's what scares me.
Well, freedom. Didn't you know, Morris? They want freedom.
Freedom, yeah, sure.
Well, the freedom to get screwed over, because here's my problem. Now by passing this Genius Act, and look, I'm not the brightest financial guy, but it just seems to me by giving this crypto, which seems to me, again, to be a Ponzi scheme in the truest sense, by giving this legitimacy and by tying it to the dollar, my fear is that all the gamblers and all the people who are, you know, coming up with complex financial instruments, that we, the taxpayers, are going to end up backstopping this scheme, much like savings and loans, much like banks who do dumb things, much like all of this. It's going to be us who have to backstop it.
Much less money market funds in 2008, you know, when there were a few people who saw their money market fund worth, you know, 99.5 cents on the dollar or 99 cents on the dollar. And that was a major crisis. You know, you're going to see people investing in stable coins that turn out to be a lot less stable than that. I'm almost positive.
Now, the other part of this, where I was going to go, is the Trump administration, as I understand it, through the Department of Labor, has opened up pension funds to be able to gamble on crypto if they see that it's in their interest. And I'm going, well, wait a second. Those pension funds, you know, that's my money. That's working class money. I don't think I want that to be allowed to be gambled on a scheme like this.
Yeah, the thing that people don't realize is that even when you talk about these, you know, billionaire fund managers, most of the money they're actually investing is owned by things like California teachers and Texas teachers and public employee retirement funds in different parts of the country. Those are the major source of money in even the biggest hedge fund management firms. And people sort of disconnect all of this. And, you know, they don't realize that, you know, hedge fund managers are not becoming rich because their investments are doing well. They're becoming rich because they're getting fees from lots of public school teachers all over the country and other working people like that.
Yeah, but, you know, again, I go back and I look at this, and, you know, some of the Democrats that voted for it, I'm just scratching my head, Ossoff and Warnock. You had, you know, Fetterman, I get, because he's kind of gone off the deep end. But Booker, yeah. You know, there's some names on there. You go, really?
Is they're thinking, oh, this is the future. This is high tech. We don't want to, like, stand in the way of progress when they don't realize that what they see as progress is really going back to the way things were, you know, a century and a half ago.
Yeah. And
even longer.
Here's my problem with this, though. I know how this plays in 10 years if this blows up in our face. This is something the Democrats brought us because 18 Democrats voted for it and nearly every Republican did, but nobody's going to remember that.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, I mean, yeah, I agree.
Much like NAFTA, you know, birthed under Reagan, fully negotiated under H.W. Bush, but Clinton put his name on it, and the majority of Democrats voted against it, but, you know, Democrats got saddled with it.
Yeah, yeah. That, yeah, I agree. I agree. Then people, when we go to parts of the country, people aren't doing well, that's a lot of what they're still talking about to this day is NAFTA. Yeah. And how, oh, Bill Clinton screwed us, and the Democrats, it's just, I don't know. I mean, even a lot of the Democrats are not really populist or progressive or whatever you want to call it. There's still plenty of Democrats who don't even realize it, but what they're doing is really trickle-down economics. You know, they talk about people who are having trouble affording to buy houses, you know, in Hicksville. And you ask them, oh, what do you want to do about this? And they describe something, and it turns out to be tax breaks for real estate developers. That'll somehow help people afford houses. And maybe it will. And, you know, we've had, you know, Mitchell-Lama programs and all kinds of stuff. But really, nobody ever talks about, oh, how about just providing more houses, you know, for, you know, people who can't afford houses? Or how about raising the minimum wage so that more people can afford to buy houses or make mortgage payments or pay the rent? How about that? Actually raising the wages of people who are having trouble affording to live, as opposed to somehow giving a break to real estate developers and landlords and think that's going to somehow trickle down to these people. It's just sad.
Yeah, well, I we've been trickled on enough, and it wasn't the rivers of gold and honey that we were sold.
Yes.
It's salty, all right, but it's not the manna from heaven that we were promised. But more
Money trickles up, not down.
Absolutely. And look, you're to have that said by you, carry some weight.
Yeah.
Because you're one of the guys who you're one of the guys who won in this game.
Yeah. Every time you make your mortgage payment or your rent payment or your iPhone payment or your iTunes or Verizon bill, that trickles up to people like me that own stock in banks and Verizon and Apple and companies like that. That's how I get rich, is little bits of money trickling up to these companies I own stock in.
Morris, as always, I appreciate the time. Good stuff.
Thank you, Rick. Great to be in your show.
Morris Pearl, chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires. Check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at the work that they do. I highly, highly suggest it. Want to hear your thoughts. Are we finally coming around to that reality that trickle down never gets down to us? Are we going to listen to Morris? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1943. That was the day that would go down in the history books as the 1943 Detroit Race Riot. The violence started on Belle Isle, a large island park in the Detroit River. Both white and black Detroiters were visiting the park on that hot, sunny summer Sunday afternoon. The fighting broke out among a number of the white and black youth. Such interracial fighting over the use of parks and recreation space happened frequently throughout the urban North during the 1940s. Soon, false rumors spread about white and black attacks on women and children. Fueled by these rumors, anger grew among members of both communities. The fighting spread across the bridge into the city. The next day, federal troops were called in to restore the peace. Over 3 days of fighting, 34 people were killed. 25 were black, including 17 killed by police and federal troops. 9 were white. The next month, the NAACP produced a report called What Caused the Detroit Riot? An Analysis. They found that one of the biggest reasons for the sharp racial animosity was the influx of new black workers into the Detroit labor force. During World War II, Detroit's mighty car industry converted its factories to wartime production. As factory workers went off to fight, demand for labor soared. Southern labor, both black and white, were recruited to come north. Many white Detroiters did not want to work with the new African-American hires. From March to May of that year, there were 5 separate work stoppages by white laborers over black hiring or promotion. At the Packard Motor Company, nearly 27,000 workers walked off the job over the upgrade of black workers. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So according to the Business Roundtable, evidently they've done a survey of their CEOs, and they don't seem thrilled. In fact, as Axios reported, economic sentiment among America's top CEOs plunged to the lowest level since 2020. They write, chief executives have not been this sour on the economy since the once-in-a-century pandemic, with significant downgrading expectations for hiring, investment, and sales growth. Also, you've got Jerome Powell, who we just talked about, worrying about stagflation fears. And again, I come back to, for people who are like, you know, you're just a union guy. Yeah, because I think that's part of the solution, a big part, a sane, rational tax code. And the ability for workers to share in the wealth that their labor creates. I think that's a really good place to start. Those two things. Everything else, we can bicker about later. Start there. And this is where Democrats should, again, I go back to where I started. This is where Democrats' wheelhouse should be. These are the issues that they should be hammering on, because this is where Republicans are the weakest, because their policies are bad. If you read Project 2025, bad. If you look at this enormous nightmare, bad. And I know, but Rick, they're gonna, no tax on tips, no tax on overtime. And I go, okay, yeah. If you're making $2.13 an hour, working for those tips, that might be helpful, considering, you know, most people that work for tips don't make enough to pay federal taxes. Okay. On the overtime front, do you want to spend all of your life working overtime? How about a higher wage? Don't hear much about that from our Republican friends. In fact, the Republicans are the ones who told us they don't believe in a minimum wage. In fact, Ron Paul was very clear. We should do away with it. It should be $1 an hour. If you're desperate enough to work for it, this is who these folks are. And understand, Democrats have done a poor job at messaging. And I would argue, and I said this about Biden, not because Biden's message was bad. It's they didn't have anywhere to go with it. Conservatives control, corporatists control the media. The magosphere now controls what people see, hear, and read. And I'm always amused and angered by the fact that so many working people are such low information voters, regurgitating what they heard third party. Especially in an era where people are going, do your own research, go watch that YouTube video while sitting on the can. So I think we're in a moment. There's an opportunity, because look, nothing Trump is doing is overly popular. The economy is not doing great. Prices haven't come down. Things are not good. There's an opportunity to reach out. And if Democrats get their heads out of their keisters and do what I've been saying, go adopt a Republican district, go talk to people, get on the streets, find Obama's comfortable shoes and get out there. Maybe you got an opportunity to swing this and bring the working class back on your side. Just a thought. I want to hear yours. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Especially my red hats. If you claim to be a former Democrat now wearing the donning the Don hat, I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com.
Until next time, this has been the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Former Columbia University grad student Mahmoud Halil is free tonight, released from a federal immigration detention center in Louisiana by a federal judge. The Trump administration had tried to deport him over his role in pro-Palestinian protests. Halil outside the detention center.
There's no right person that who should be detained for actually protesting a genocide, for protesting their university, Columbia University, that is investing in the genocide of the Palestinian people.
Charges have been filed against two men accused of threatening two lawmakers, a 25-year-old man charged with attempting to kidnap Memphis Mayor Paul Young, and the man accused of trying to run Congressman Max Miller off the road in Ohio over the conflict in Gaza is now in custody. In Tel Aviv, air raid sirens sounding again as Iran fires more missiles into Israel, now a week into the conflict, that as diplomatic efforts get underway in Geneva. This is ABC News.